Good evening, and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY 88.1 FM, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Pamela Warcone, your host this evening. On tonight's program, we're going to be speaking with two of the Lehigh Valley's most well-known and highly regarded philanthropic organizations, beginning with the Ryder Pool Trust and their support of Allentown's RCI Village, a permanent housing solution for the homeless. And in our second segment, we'll be discussing the wonderful work of Big Brothers Big Sisters and how important mentoring is to the fulfillment of their mission. Joining me in the studio to begin the program is Edward Meehan and Sherry Binder. Since 1983, Ed has served as executive director of the Dorothy Ryder Pool Healthcare Trust and the Ryder Pool Foundation. Those two philanthropies, with combined assets of more than $90 million, broadly support health, wellness, human services, the arts, public education, and community development in the Lehigh Valley. Dr. Sherry Binder is the executive director of Ripple Community Incorporated, a position she has held since the organization was founded in 2015. During that time, Dr. Binder has led the organization in establishing two programs that emerged from the needs of Allentown's most vulnerable residents, including the city's first permanent community-supported affordable housing program, which will be the focus of our conversation this evening. Trained as a community psychologist, Dr. Binder's work has spanned the academic, nonprofit, and private sectors with a consistent focus on building strong and healthy communities. Welcome, Ed and Sherry, to Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Thank you, Pam. Appreciate you having us on the show.
Mm-hmm. Ed, let's begin by providing our audience with a quick overview of the Ryder Pool Foundation. For an organization that has such an impact on the Valley's quality of life, it seems to stay somewhat under the radar.
Well, I think over the years, going back to Dorothy Ryder Pool and Leonard Parker Pool, who were very quiet donors, like to shine the spotlight on the programs and the people that we fund. I think we spend more time celebrating the accomplishments of the organizations we support rather than shine the spotlight on ourselves. As you know, Dorothy Ryder Pool started the Ryder Pool Foundation in 1957, and Leonard Pool, upon his death, left the residue of his estate to establish the Dorothy Ryder Pool Healthcare Trust in his first wife's name. So I have the opportunity to serve for two boards, two not-for-profit organizations that have been longstanding in its contribution to the Lehigh Valley.
And for our newer residents who might not actually know who the Pools were, can you give us just a little bit about their background and where their fortune came from?
Sure. Mr. Pool actually was the oldest boy in a very large family during the Depression. He supported his family after his parents passed away, was a hardworking, very driven, passionate individual. Married Dorothy Ryder Pool, and they were partners. They were good friends, as well as husband and wife. And Mr. Pool founded Air Products and Chemicals. He started it in his garage in Detroit, after World War II, was looking for a place to relocate. They started in Detroit. They were in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And they were looking for a good quality of life, a place that they could attract engineers and researchers and scientists. Have close proximity to Marketplace, and they chose the Lehigh Valley. And in their adopted home in the Lehigh Valley, they became very involved in civic affairs. Leonard Pool was very instrumental in the creation of Lehigh Valley Health Network and the original Ash Hospital. And when he passed, he left his estate to establish the Pool Healthcare Trust and named Lehigh Valley Health Network as his primary beneficiary. So the mission of the Healthcare Trust is to help Lehigh Valley Health Network be a superior regional hospital and improve the health of the citizens of the region. The Ryder Pool Foundation has supported over the years the arts, health and human services, education, particularly K-12 education and community development. And increasingly, we're looking to leaders like Sherry to help us think through the community challenges that are extremely difficult, that kind of defy descriptions, whether they're housing or education, and kind of blend a little bit more to say, how do we get smarter and better at this? And Sherry is certainly exemplary as a leader.
Well, that is a beautiful segue. Sherry, it's your turn to enlighten our audience. Tell us about a Ripple Community Incorporated. I know it was modeled on the famous Jubilee Housing Program in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm, sure. So Ripple Community Inc. is a relatively new nonprofit based in Allentown, and we actually emerged out of the work of a church called Ripple, which is a Mennonite church, actually, that's been active in the city for about 10 years. And I usually describe Ripple Church as kind of not your average church. So it's a congregation of about 100 people, made up almost entirely of folks who are kind of socially or economically marginalized for one reason or another. So kind of on the edges of society. And the church has always done a really spectacular job of kind of building community among people who are otherwise pretty disconnected from what's going on. So about 3.5, going on 4 years ago, our nonprofit kind of emerged out of the community building work that the church had been doing. We were hearing from the members of that community that they really valued the connection that they felt as part of the congregation, but not everyone wants to be part of a church community. And so they also felt very strongly that they, there wasn't a good, safe, kind of welcoming place that they could go during the day, during the week. Essentially started the nonprofit by opening a day center called the Community Building Center. That was the first thing we did. So that's been operating now about 3.5 years.
Now, is that for adults to go during the day?
It is. It's adults. So it's open to the public, but it primarily serves adults in the community who are, living with homelessness or struggling with other things that just make their lives a little bit fragile, mental illness or histories of trauma or abuse, that sort of thing.
And where is that located, Sherry?
It's located at 14th and Linden Street. So some of your listeners might be familiar with the former Stevens Funeral Home property. That is our property. So we were able to take that space, convert it into our community center, and then the property actually includes 13 apartments that are the basis of our housing initiative. So we started the organization by creating a safe day space for folks, and then from there we were just consistently hearing from our community members that they just could not find good, safe, well-maintained, appropriate places to live. We were spending a lot of time helping people look for apartments and not finding them. We were seeing people who were just kind of continually cycling through homelessness, maybe moving into a very temporary spot and then kind of cycling right back into homelessness. And so as an organization, we started to wonder whether this was something that we could help to shift in Allentown. So we, with a little bit of hesitation, right? It's a complex challenge. You don't want to jump into it without thinking it through carefully. So we did our homework. We spent a lot of time looking at different organizations around the country who had kind of dealt with similar challenges in a similar context, and that's how we came across the Jubilee Housing Program in Washington, D.C. So we've essentially been able to, learn a great deal from the work that they've done over the past 40 years, copy, adapt, and paste it in Allentown. And now we are, as you mentioned, the city's first permanent community-supported affordable housing program.
Well, this is a really interesting history. First of all, every great idea has a starting point. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at your starting points, and one of them, of course, is Jubilee, because mm-hmm. you had a 40-year model in Washington mm-hmm. that worked. But the other that stood out to me was the Mennonite Church mm-hmm. And this kind of particular outreach type of congregation. Is there a particular pastor or a particular leader within that that group that has been, you feel, a driving force behind this?
That's a great question. There are actually 5 pastors who lead Ripple Church, all of whom have other day jobs. So it's something that people have kind of committed to. It's not a particularly lucrative position, as you can imagine. So it's something that the pastors have come to really as a calling. There are... you know, I wouldn't say that there's really one person that who drives it. It really has been a very, you know, very much a community-led effort. The original pastors who founded the church, you know, moved to the city, you know, kind of not knowing exactly what they were coming here for, but, you know, feeling like that was what they were supposed to do. And they made friends with some people who were living under the 8th Street Bridge at the time. And that's how the
church. So they came to town and started ministering,
yeah,
and
right.
started to build this community.
Made friends with, you know, people who were homeless at the time. Those people invited their friends to be part of the community, and then the church has really grown from there.
Isn't that a wonderful
yeah.
story?
Yeah.
Ed, has the foundation ever done this sort of thing before? I know that you've supported so many things in the community, but this seems like a very unique project. How did you come to the point where you felt comfortable supporting something this new and this unique?
We found Sherry and Ripple Community, and Sherry and Ripple Community found us. it's their the work and how they conceptualize their work is very consistent with how we've been thinking about our work the last five or so years. If going back to 2012, we did a survey, a key informant interview with 65 leaders in the Lehigh Valley, asking them about perception. And everyone knows the Lehigh Valley is a wonderful place to live and excellent quality of life. But there are folks in the Lehigh Valley who aren't able to enjoy the same prosperity and quality of life that everyone does. And what we learned from those interviews that we did was that the leadership of the Lehigh Valley was talking to us about the fact that things happened in silos, that people felt isolated, that organizations felt isolated, and that just everything was kind of separate. And that there was a leadership question about where was the leadership for the future coming. And we looked at this information, thought about it a bit, and thought about how can the Ryder Pool Foundation help with this? The traditional grant-making approach wasn't going to work for us. We'd have to rethink how we strategized. So what we started to do was thinking about how to build capacity in the not-for-profit world. How do we think about grooming the next generation of leaders? How do we get leaders in not-for-profits, whether it's education or housing or health or youth services, to know one another, to share data, and think about how to have greater impact? So we started a fellowship, a collective impact fellowship. We're 5 years into that work. There have been 50 trained fellows, and Sherry is one. And I believe you'll have a guest who is coming up shortly, who is also a collective impact fellow of Ryder Pool Foundation. So we discovered Sherry's work while it was in development, and it just met so many of the things that we were thinking about in terms of how you approach a problem. Yes, there's immediate homelessness, and yes, there are people who need immediately help now. And while we're doing that, as a community, as a Lehigh Valley, we have to think about how to get upstream on some of those challenges. And I think Sherry represents, and Ripple represents a good way to go about that. So, great fit for us, and
wonderful timing. It
wonderful
just
timing.
Really all came together.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful timing.
There's a question I just have to ask about the name Ripple, and we're almost up against a break. But
sure.
Can you answer that, the question about how the Ripple name came to be?
I can. I like to think that it came out of the Grateful Dead song, Ripple. That's the story I wish I could tell. But the truth is that it's very simply developed out of, you know, this notion of dropping a stone into
mm-hmm.
still water and mm-hmm. watching the ripples move out. I think that's, you know, it's a good description of the culture and the work both of Ripple Church and of Ripple Community, Inc.
That's a great story, although mm-hmm. the one about the Grateful Dead is pretty good,
know.
Too.
Yeah, you could have had us with that one, too.
Yes, we would have believed you in a minute. We are going to pause for a short break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Ed Meehan and Dr. Sherry Binder on WDIY 88.1 FM, Lehigh Valley Public Radio.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Pamela Varcone, your host this evening, and I'm so pleased to have joining me this evening Ed Meehan and Dr. Sherry Binder. We are talking about the wonderful new project that the Ryder Pool Foundation is sponsoring, has underwritten, and that Dr. Sherry Binder is leading. Sherry, tell us who makes the decisions about who gets into this program, mm-hmm. because I know there is such a tremendous need for housing, mm-hmm. good housing, safe housing in Allentown, that there must be a tremendous demand. How does that decision made as to who qualifies to get in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. And you're absolutely right. So the need can be, you know, almost overwhelming. You know, we certainly work with a lot of folks who have struggled with housing instability, you know, their entire lives. We work with, you know, people who, you know, essentially just need a little bit of extra support to stay housed. And so when we started thinking about this program and what it would look like in practice, we knew that we wanted to start by making sure that the housing we were providing was well-maintained, safe, affordable housing. That sounds like, you know, a given, but it's not. A lot mm-hmm. of the folks we work with, if they are able to find a place to live, they're living in a you know, place that doesn't have running water, or the doors don't lock, or the heat doesn't work in the winter. It's rough.
It's very rough.
It's very rough. And so we wanted to make sure that we were, you know, definitely providing something better on that front. And also that we were putting some other kind of wraparound supports in place so that mm-hmm. when people got into the apartments, they were able to be successful and stay there. We also didn't want, you know, to just, you know, the question you asked about how do we choose residents is an important one. You know, I didn't want that to be, you know, I sit down and pick my, you know, my friends off a list, right? That's not a good approach. So what we did actually is we put together a committee made up of several of our close organizational partners in the community. So the committee has representatives from our organization, representatives from the Lehigh Valley Street Medicine Program, if you're familiar with that, mm-hmm. The Parish Nursing Program out of St. Luke's, and also McKinley Elementary School, which is right around the corner from our office and operations space. So we put together that committee. The purpose of it is that, you know, kind of among us, we're pretty close to the ground. We know a lot of the folks who are struggling in Allentown. We mm-hmm. know their stories. We have mm-hmm. relationships with them.
So does the group make recommendations?
Mm-hmm, yep. So the group kind of reviews, you know, people who express interest, review those names and applications, and then decide who is able
okay,
to be
so it, it's
program.
Done by a qualified committee.
Correct.
Okay. Now, I know that RCI is not free housing.
Right.
Residents do pay rent. Mm-hmm. How is that rate established? Is there mm-hmm. a sliding scale by income? Mm-hmm. How is that determined?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So at this point, there isn't a sliding scale. So all of the apartments are set at a rate that we felt, you know, in getting to know our community would be manageable for most of the people we work with. So, for example, a two-bedroom apartment in our building is $750 a month, inclusive of all utilities. So that's pretty good on the, you know, Allentown map. But we do also work with people, you know, for whom that's still a pretty salty number. That's a, you know, mm-hmm. that's a big number.
Yes.
And so we have what we call an adopt an apartment program that allows us through the support of community members to lower those rates down for people who are extremely low income and need to, you know, pay even less than the rates that we've set.
Okay. Well, that leads to a question that I think is really important. There mm-hmm. is no government funding
correct.
Involved in this project. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. And so that's a decision we made very early on in consultation, again, with Jubilee Housing in Washington, D.C. One thing we wanted to do was make sure that if we started a new housing program, we could make sure that that program was molded to meet the needs of our community here. We wanted to make sure that we had that flexibility. And for a million reasons, federal funding is not known for its flexibility. And so that's the route we chose. So all of our work is privately funded through foundations, corporations, including City Center and others, and then individual donors.
So you do have multiple sources of income.
Sure, we do. Yes, it's just none of it is government funding.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do private individuals contribute?
They do, yes. In fact, we have a good collection of individuals who have been very supportive of the program locally here, and also through the regional Mennonite community, actually has been very supportive.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. You did mention City Center Investment mm-hmm. Corporation, and I know that they recently gave you a $10,000 grant mm-hmm. for the program. Mm-hmm. Do you, considering the money that they have invested in downtown Allentown, do you believe you're going to have an ongoing relationship with them?
I certainly hope so. So, part of the conversation we've been having with them is talking about the need in Allentown for affordable housing. Everyone knows that the need exists. Mm-hmm. We're particularly good at working with people who are, can be a little bit challenging to work with. And so we feel like that's a niche that we can play in making sure that there remains a place in Allentown for people who are a little bit more vulnerable, that we can provide housing that's integrated, where people mm-hmm. can still be part of the community while the rest, while the city grows and changes.
Ed, I know you're very plugged into that entire community. How do you feel about that? Do you,
Pam, I think that individual donors will frequently give with their heart, and mm-hmm. corporate and foundation donors will give with their head. I think you need the head and the heart to mm-hmm. do this work. And so what are you looking for when you think about a charitable donation? You're looking at someone who can make a difference. You're looking at something that could be meaningful. You're looking at some way to make an investment that will provide a yield going mm-hmm. forward. Mm-hmm. And so that's the head part. And you look at leadership, and you look at the ability to stick with the plan and be solid with it. That's the head part. The hard part is the residents at Ripple Community are folks who have lived independently. They've just not been able to maintain it for various reasons. And so the idea of building community, anchoring them in the community, mm-hmm. giving them friendly faces mm-hmm. and enabling them with some additional support, not just, mm-hmm. the rent is due on the 5th of the month, mm-hmm. but what other kinds of things do you need to remind you that the rent is due, and how do you need help? The connection with with McKinley Elementary School, et cetera, is huge. So I think that in time, there will be phenomenal support for Ripple, not just for Ripple, but there will be phenomenal support for not-for-profits who are willing to adapt and change and evolve and think about how to pragmatically address the challenges that we have in housing, health, education.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and we certainly do have them, although we're very fortunate that we live in a community that recognizes it and often steps forward to do what they can. Speaking of that, what do you say to people who will tend to say, well, there's already numerous housing programs in Allentown, and we just have so many nonprofits doing so many different things in Allentown. Why did we need this program? What is the answer to that question?
Mm-hmm. I am not sure that the Ryder Pool trustees viewed Ripple as a housing program per mm-hmm. se. Mm-hmm. We viewed it as an effort to think about how to connect people socially, how to reduce social isolation, how to build community. And yes, there's a housing component to it, but it's just more than that. So what we're finding, if I switch hats and think about the Pool Healthcare Trust, the term is social determinants of health. So what's talked about in the literature is that housing has a lot to do with health. Educational attainment has a lot to do with health. Public safety, there are numerous things that will impact on someone's health. And if you just think about housing as a separate subject, you're not able to address the broader dimensions that need to be thought about and looked at in order to have a systemic program, the totality of a program. So, for example, I'm fairly confident that the folks who will be residents and clients of Ripple Community will have better access to health, will be healthier over time. and be, if I could say this, but forgive me for saying it, but less of a burden on crowded mm-hmm. emergency rooms mm-hmm. and probably cost less over time because they'll be connected. So I think for me, I just didn't think of it as a housing program, you know, mm-hmm. just separately.
I want to focus on that word community because I think it's important for our audience to understand that this is more than just housing. Mm-hmm. There you have support services and support staff that work with your residents. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that, Sherry, just a bit? Because I want the audience to understand what a comprehensive program this is.
Sure. So everything that we do at Ripple Community Inc. is based on relationships and community and connection. So, you know, from where we sit, that is the starting point of everything that makes life good and meaningful and worth living. So that's how we approached our, you know, our housing program as well when we started that. So the program itself, as I mentioned, you know, starts with apartments. Obviously, you mm-hmm. need a, you know, you need a brick and mortar place for people to live. But there are several other pieces that we kind of plug in around the residents. So one piece is individualized support from our staff. So, you know, the people we work with, I could tell you, you know, lots of stories. Their stories will, you know, they'll bring you to your knees. They'll keep you there if they're lucky, right? They've been through a lot, just really extensive histories of trauma and other challenges. Every story is different. Every situation is different. And so we think it's very important to have an individualized kind of staff connection, someone who can meet with the residents regularly, talk one-on-one about goals, challenges, you know, anything that they need to address kind of on an individual level. Mm-hmm. We also connect people out to, or residents out to other organizations in the community that help address some of the common causes of homelessness or housing instability. So we work, for example, with the Lehigh Valley Office of Mental Health, the Center for Independent Living, organizations that can, you know, provide related services, you know, that we don't need to replicate, but that people can benefit from. And then we, you know, we do really take seriously this notion of community. So we don't just, you know, insert someone in an apartment and wish them luck. We're very deliberate about making sure that residents in the program are, you know, part of a supportive community, which means getting to know their neighbors and being involved in activities there, but also kind of connecting into the larger community. So we organize all sorts of events and activities that, you know, try to build that type of support.
We are coming up to the end of our program, and I want to make sure that our listeners know how they can become involved with Ripple Community if they would like to. They would like to support it in some way. How do they go about doing that, Sherry?
Sure. So we actually just launched our new website. So I would invite all of your listeners to visit our website at ripplecommunityinc.org. We would be more than happy to have people involved. We have lots of opportunities ranging from volunteer opportunities at our day center, all the way to you know, as Ed mentioned, we are looking to expand this program considerably. We've set a goal of expanding to 50 apartments in the coming years. So we're looking for partners who are willing to, you know, invest in our mission and invest in our work and help us reach those goals.
Well, that is just fantastic, and it's a wonderful way to end the program. That is all that we have time for in this segment. I want to thank Ed Meehan, Executive Director of the Dorothy Ryder Poole Healthcare Trust and the Ryder Poole Foundation, and Dr. Sherry Binder, Executive Director of Ripple Community Incorporated, for being my guest this evening. It's encouraging to know we have such a forward-leaning project providing stable housing for the neediest residents of Allentown. Thank you both very much. We're going to take a short break. When we return, we'll be joined by Susan Bartle, CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Lehigh Valley. I'm Pamela Varconi, and you're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY 88.1 FM, Lehigh Valley Public Radio.
The many choices and real voices on WDIY are made possible with support from our generous, sustaining members. An automatic monthly gift of $10 on your credit card is an easy way to become a WDIY member and support the programs you love. Set up your monthly sustaining membership gift today. Call 610-694-8000. 8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Pamela Varcone, your host this evening, and I'm joined here in the WDIY studio by Susan Bartle, CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Lehigh Valley. Susan has spent her career in the nonprofit services sector, having been director of programs for Big Brothers Big Sisters Bucks County and assistant director of youth services for the YWCA of Bucks County. Susan, welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Thank you so much.
Let's begin by giving our listeners some background. Big Brothers Big Sisters has been part of the American nonprofit landscape for some time. Share some of that history with us and bring us up to speed on the new branding voice that you've just rolled out.
Yes, so our national organization's been together for about 110 years. So it's a long, rich history. And about a year and a half ago, they really began to say, how do we stay relevant in today's world? And so they really started looking at our current brand, our brand back then, about a year and a half ago. And in October, they unveiled a new look, a new sound, a new
tagline. So October of 2018.
2018, yes. They unveiled a new brand and a new look. And we're really excited about the new brand, and what it really is a call to action. It's about every child having potential, and that it's really up to the community to defend their potential.
I like that terminology, defend. You're not using the word develop, you're using the word defend. And I think that's it's actually a little bit more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it describes what needs to happen with children who are growing up in sometimes very difficult circumstances. They need to be defended.
Absolutely. I think of one family that we have right now. The mom was in a domestic violence situation, and she left her community in New York and came to Pennsylvania, Lehigh Valley. She has five children. Mm. Now she's a single mom trying to raise five children, and she looked to us for matches, and each of her children now have a big brother and big sister. So all five children have their own unique one-to-one relationship. And the mom's perspective is how helpful it is for her to have mentors for her children, because it's really a great support and validates what she's trying to do to raise her children the right way.
Well, being a single mom is difficult under any circumstances, but having to have fled a domestic abuse situation, start all over again, and then have five children, that is a challenge. So Big Brothers Big Sisters has really stepped in there and helped her, mm-hmm. helped her out. What would you say about people who say, boy, I'd love to do this, but it's just such a time commitment? Are there different levels at which people can become involved?
Yeah, there actually are. So one of the easiest way to get engaged with us from a time perspective is something we started about 2 years ago called Littles to Be. So we have a great...
Okay, that's Littles, L-I-T-T-L-E-S.
Correct.
Number two.
B-E. Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and what that means is there's a number of children who are not yet matched in a one-to-one relationship. That's always our end goal. But in the meantime, we want to give kids the opportunity to connect with other peers, their peers, and we want to give volunteers an opportunity to see if this is a program that they could see themselves being in long term. So that commitment is three times a year. So we ask a volunteer to just come to our youth mentoring center. We plan the activity, we plan dinner, we bring the children in, they just show up and play. And then it's an opportunity for them to say, you know what, this program can work for me, I can commit to this. And oh, by the way, this child, I really enjoy their interaction with this child, I want to potentially be matched to that child.
All right. So it's kind of a step up beginner program.
Yes.
Now, I know you also have you have kind of a subset where you can be at school with the child occasionally. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So we actually have a program where it's corporate mentoring, where you can either go to a school for breakfast, you can go to a school for lunch, or you can go after school. So we actually started a partnership with the city of Easton, and Dave Hopkins is actually a mentor at Paxinosa Elementary School, and he goes to breakfast. And
now,
he,
who is Dave Hopkins?
He actually is part of the city employees and runs their public service.
Okay, so he's a big brother.
He is a big brother, yeah. So he actually, you know, is a great resource for us to connect to the employees of the city of Easton and really getting behind the children from that community.
So if you wanted to seeing if you could engage with a child at school, you can go there for breakfast or lunch and commit to just that program.
Correct. And that's a school year. So you're basically paired up with them one-to-one. Again, we find a child that really shares interests that you have, and you're matched with that child for that whole year.
The whole school year.
And in this particular situation, you play a lot of games. You talk about what's going on in school. You're really helping them maybe with their schoolwork, and just really being a support for them, whatever they're dealing with in life.
Are there children on a waiting list out there? Are there children who are waiting for someone?
There are. So we actually have about 200 children who want our service.
Oh, my goodness, 200.
Yes, and we have about 70% of them are boys. So we really have a need for big brothers.
I see. Well, I suppose, you know, men, this is a delicate subject, but I think if we're going to help here, we need to broach it. There has just been so much conversation between some of the issues going on in the Catholic Church and the Me Too movement and that sort of thing. I'm sure there are people who would love to do this and are very hesitant about being alone with a child that they're not related to, that they don't know very well. How do you address that?
I think the two programs I just talked about is one way that we do that so that you can be in a supervised setting. But the other piece that Big Brothers Big Sisters is known for is our rigorous follow through and follow up. So once a match is made, we provide support on an ongoing basis. Every month we check in with the volunteer, the parent, and the child. We also make sure that there's no safety concerns. So we're really probing. And the best thing I would tell you to do if you're a volunteer is just to always be in the public. So don't take the child to your home. Don't take the child to a place where you potentially could be at risk for some of those situations that you were talking about.
Right. So how many mentors do you need right now?
So we would love to match all 200, but in the end of the day, we're really going to be looking to do a campaign for 30 bigs in 30 days.
Okay.
So we really feel like if we get manageable and we put a goal out there and we can get the community behind us, we could match 30 children that are currently waiting to Big Brother or Big Sister.
Okay, so that sounds very doable, doesn't it, audience? 30 mentors in 30 days. Tell me, how do children come to you? How do they get into the program?
Yeah, so a lot of the people who know about us, we have a great brand recognition. So a lot of times parents will call us and say, I would like to get my child involved. And then the other group of people that make referrals to us are teachers.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so if a teacher sees a child that maybe is struggling or lonely or is isolated in some way, they would call you?
Yeah, that's how we get a lot of the referrals. I would say usually the children we're serving are coming from single-parent homes, I would say predominantly. And then they might have maybe a family member or a close relative that might be incarcerated. They might, you know, really be struggling to fit in at school. They might be being bullied. They might not do well academically in school. So all those children who just need somebody to say, you know what, you can achieve, you can do whatever you have your heart set out on, whatever your interests are, I believe in you, no matter what happens, I'm going to stand in your corner. That's the type of child that we're looking to really build their self-esteem.
Does to be a big brother or big sister, does someone need previous parenting experience?
Not at all. In fact, what we find a lot is people who are either new in the field as far as their career path, so young professionals, college students. I started as a college big. I had no experience as a parent at that time and loved it and got a lot of value from it, and my little sister as well. And so that's a real group of individuals that really
are wonderful mentors, and it's a great way for you to build skills. Like, you have no idea when you step up to be a mentor what you learn from the experience. But what we find is it really is a hidden surprise when you volunteer. So that's how I describe it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times people say, I want to get involved because I want to make a difference for the in a life of a child. And mm-hmm. that does happen. Mm-hmm. But the other side that happens is you as a volunteer can watch a child grow and progress. And they were once quiet and now they talk to you, or they mm-hmm. get a good grade in school. And you know you had something to do with that. Mm-hmm. And it's just like this sense of pride that you have about that child's accomplishments.
I do some volunteer teaching and some peer teaching, and I always say I learn so much more than I know I have taught. It's always just a wonderful experience mm-hmm. to share your knowledge and get something back, and then that creates that bridge
Absolutely.
That you can both walk across.
Mm-hmm.
When children come to you and they do get a mentor, do you start to see a difference in them? I know you say you do rigorous follow-up and everything. What kind of development, what kind of differences do you see in them?
Yeah, we actually track outcomes. And so there's the stories, right? But then there's also the actual hard data that we collect. We look at, are they going to graduate high school? How are they interacting with their peers? How is their relationship with adults in their life? How are their grades? So all those hard data we collect and track. But then there's all the stories that you hear too. And I would say, here's a prime story that we just had. We had an event in April at Iacocca Hall, and we had an alumni big brother and his little brother come and share their experience. And the really neat part about that is the little brother's comment was, it worked. And what did he mean by that? He's like, I graduated high school. I went on to college. I went into the military. Now I'm going to get my master's. I don't have any children. You know, when I graduated mm-hmm. high school, I didn't have any children. I didn't get in trouble with the law. All that is why our program works. So you definitely see the data, but you also hear the stories because of a person saying, you know what, you can achieve whatever you want.
So primarily what this mentoring does is it gives a child an outlet, a mm-hmm. safe place to talk about what is going on with them and to receive reinforcement back so that they can stay on the right track and not get pulled off.
Absolutely. There's so many negative influences nowadays that a mentor really just stands in their corner and says, you can do it.
Mm-hmm. I know that you have been a big sister yourself, and are you currently still a big sister?
I am, yes. Actually, I have a girl that actually started in the school program, and now I see her in the community. And she wants to be a principal in the future. So it's like our personalities match very well. And she likes to tell me all the things that are taking place at school. Then I get to, when I was in the school program with her, she used to like to play teacher with me. And I was the student, so she liked to mark up my spelling test and tell me how many times I spelled cat wrong or whatever word it was, whatever grade she was in. So it's been a great, rewarding experience. And I like doing it because it helps me stay relevant to what kids are dealing with today.
Mm-hmm. And you have a little sister who's been very successful.
Yeah, actually, my one little sister that I knew for about 20 years actually just decided to be a big sister herself.
Well, that is very exciting. So you've actually passed it on. You've not only helped her have a good life, but now she's going to pass that forward. That is wonderful. Well, we're going to pause for just a short station break here at WDIY 88.1 FM. Please stay with us as we continue our conversation with Susan Bartles, CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Lehigh Valley.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Martin Richter. Join me and our other hosts each weekday from 9 to noon for WDIY Classics, medieval to baroque, romantic to modern, along with concert information and artist interviews.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse with our guest Susan Bartles, CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Lehigh Valley. Susan, before we went to break, we were talking about your own personal experience of being a big sister. Are you encouraging people to come forward, no matter what their own skill level is, or are there certain types of careers that people are in that would be particularly valuable to you?
So I would say anyone can be a mentor. The way I like to say it is mentoring happens informally all the time, and we just formalize it. We give children a formal way to build their social network. A lot of times the children that we're serving don't have a lot of opportunities they're exposed to. And so what a mentor does is just expose them to their network, their career, their family. And they just broaden out what they can see possible for themselves by having that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Their view broadens.
Correct. Their view broadens. Their what they can see for themselves, it expands because of who they're learning and interacting with.
Mm-hmm. What about people who have, say, scientific or high-tech careers? Is that something that would be valuable, or is that perhaps a step too far?
No, actually, we're really excited because in the fall, we're going to be looking at doing workforce mentoring and STEM mentoring. So we are converting one of our rooms downstairs into a technology center.
Oh, that's very exciting.
So absolutely. If you have a degree or interest in helping kids learn what they might need to know in the future workforce, mm-hmm. around like coding or
building websites.
Yes, websites. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we recently built some robotic with Legos, but there's so much that you can do. So we're looking for people who have an interest in that and really want to help inform and teach the younger generation kind of what's going to be needed and required in tomorrow's workforce.
Oh, that's a really great thing to help put them on a career path. Now, is there an age limit? Is there a certain age group that'll be doing that?
We're going to probably start with middle schoolers, mm-hmm. and then build into high school. Mm-hmm. And so we're really just in the beginning stages of dreaming, what will that look like? We got some money to actually convert and do some capital repairs, mm-hmm. to our building.
Was that a foundation grant?
That was actually from Trexler Trust.
Oh, wonderful.
And so we're really grateful for that donation. And so now we'll be able to really turn this into what children need in our community.
Well, talking about what children need, I do want to kind of double back to the fact that many of these children are at risk,
mm-hmm.
and they have had traumatic events in their life. Without sounding like daytime television, can you give us some examples of some of the children who have come to you that have really needed, they've really needed support and healing? They've been through some very difficult things.
So we have one situation, I can tell you a story. His father passed away. And the piece of the story that I really like is his deceased father's birthday was the same birthday as his big brother.
Oh.
So when the mom and the little brother met him, like the first thing they asked the big brother was, "What's your birthday?" And so from that moment on, they were really bonded because of that. So we see death a lot, mm-hmm. Divorce situations, as I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's physical abuse that might have been in the family. Sometimes it's, situations where they don't have enough financial resources to put food on the table. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the situations that the kids are dealing with, you know, could be around poverty.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some, not many, but sometimes children and families might end up in a shelter. We have one family right now that's living in a hotel.
Mm.
So, you know, definitely the financial hardships that single parent families might have, mm-hmm. is one piece that our volunteers are trained on what to do about.
Okay. But I think it's important for our listeners to understand that when you become a big brother, big sister, you are not financially responsible for in any way for that child.
No. In fact, we would discourage all of that, mm-hmm. because it's really about forming a bond and mm-hmm. a relationship with that child, mm-hmm. we would want you to inform us about what's going on in that family, and then we look for resources. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of folks that deal with shelter for families. We would mm-hmm. turn that over to the experts in the community to handle that.
Or a food bank.
Correct.
Or, yes.
Yes, we make all those connections.
Okay. So tell our audience a little bit about the organization itself. Where is it located? How many volunteers do you have? Not just Big Brothers, Big Sisters, but I know you have other types of volunteer opportunities. Tell us a little bit about the organization.
Sure. We are located on 41 South Carlisle Street, which is on the east side of Allentown.
Okay.
And I have to tell this little story because it's like such a beautiful opportunity for us. We were gifted the church building. We're actually in a church, and we were gifted the church building from St. Joe's Lutheran Church. And so they were down to serving 15, they only have 15 members, and they have this program with Moser Elementary School. Mm-hmm. And so they wanted somebody to continue that program for them. And so we have. So now on Thursdays, children from Moser Elementary School come down to our building, and we have like homework assistance. We teach kids how to sew. We teach kids how to have healthy eating.
And that's through volunteers?
That's through volunteers. So okay. We have about 10 volunteers that come through that program on a weekly basis, and another 30 children that get served in that program. So it's a very neighborhood-based type program. And then we have 382 one-to-one matches that we served last fiscal year.
382. Oh, that's wonderful.
And then in our Littles-to-Be program that I mentioned before, we serve another 50 volunteers that get involved with us that way. And we're really excited about the 29 matches that came from that experience.
Oh, that's fantastic. But we're still looking for 30 and 30.
We are looking for 30 and 30, for sure. Absolutely.
So what kind of support have you found from the community? Aside from the people who actually volunteer are really, you know, involved, has the general community been supportive?
Yeah, we actually have our huge fundraiser, which is Bowl for Kids' Sake, happens the first Sunday of every March, and we get about 80 companies come behind us.
Oh, wow.
And sponsor a bowling event and mm-hmm. their employees to come and bowl that day and fundraise on our behalf. So that's great community buy-in. We're actually going to be looking at launching a way to raise funds from a corporate leader perspective. So we really want to build capacity with our leaders to help them understand how if they invest in prevention, they can really help create the future workplace.
Oh, that's wonderful. Tell us the names of some of the companies that are involved in your bowling fundraiser.
Yep. So we have Bebron that comes out. We have PP&L that comes out. This year we had Lafayette Ambassador Bank come out with 6 teams.
Wow.
Santander Bank came out with 11 teams. Wells Fargo is our biggest supporter, and they came out with about 22 teams.
My goodness. Everybody, I didn't know that many people bowled.
It's amazing. We actually have 800 people come through the bowling alley that day. So we have 4 time slots. Every time slot sold out, 800 people come through.
Well, that is a really, that's a great fundraiser, a successful fundraiser, and it sounds like it's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
Please tell us just a little bit more about this leadership that you're going to be developing. I think that's really important because the Lehigh Valley has always been kind of leadership town father, town mother focused.
Mm-hmm.
And I think plugging into that is probably a really good idea. Tell us about that initiative.
Yeah, we're calling it Lead Big. And so what we're really looking to do is have companies stand behind our matches and really create opportunities for them to network with each other, for them to get some leadership training. So young executives, you know, you can send your millennials or people who you want to connect with others and mm-hmm. really build that network.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you're financially supporting the work that we're doing. And we're going to give a call to action in those companies to spread the word that we need mentors. So taking it beyond, if we get 5 companies or 10 companies, now we're expanding the call to action mm-hmm. through that program.
And do you have prominent people in the community, leadership, people in leadership positions that are already currently involved with the organization?
So we have Dean Rothrock.
Oh, yes.
His mm-hmm. Him and his wife actually did couples matching, and they're now an alumni match because he moved out of the area. But we have him that was really involved with us for over the years. We have really good engagement with B. Braun is probably one of our big supporters, and we've gone in and been able to recruit their employees to be mentors and volunteers with us.
That's great. It sounds like you really have broad-based support.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Big Brothers Big Sisters has an excellent reputation, and as you said, it's been in existence for over 100 years, and almost everyone has heard of it and knows what a worthwhile organization it is. So how can someone reach out to you? What type of volunteers, beside mentors, you're talking about people who can come in and maybe do art projects or help with meals or that kind of thing? Can you use volunteers like that?
Yeah, actually, once a quarter, we try to do activities for our bigs and littles. And so recently, we went to a dance studio. Recently, we had Aldi do a healthy cooking, healthy eating kind of education.
Mm-hmm.
We just had one of the local banks come in and teach financial literacy to children.
Oh, that's
so
a good
any
thing.
Opportunity that you think, hey, children could benefit from learning this, mm-hmm. we would be open to having a dialogue of what that partnership could look
oh,
like.
Oh, that's really wonderful. I hadn't even thought about that. But like if you own a business or you provide a service,
correct.
Can you translate that to the point where it would help children understand what is going to be expected of them as they grow up and go out into the community?
Absolutely. Because the other thing it does is it networks the bigs. So when you bring quarterly activities together, mm-hmm. you have bigs and littles that have an opportunity to interact with other bigs and littles. So you're building the bigs network, and you're teaching skills to the children all at the same time.
Oh, that is a wonderful idea. I'm glad we managed to cover that because we are winding up here. How can someone reach you or reach the organization so they can either get more information or they can volunteer at some capacity?
So I would go on our website, which is www.bbbslv.org. It stands for Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Lehigh Valley.
Okay, no dots, dashes, or spaces in that BBBSLV.
Correct.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, I just want to thank you so much for being with us. I want to thank my first segment guests, Ed Meehan and Sherry Binder, as well as my current guest, Susan Bartles, for sharing their passion and their stories with us. And I want to thank you, our listeners. We hope you have found tonight's program to be interesting, informative, and inspiring. If you have, please consider how you can make a difference by becoming involved with the wonderful community-based organizations we've heard about this evening. And if your heart was moved by the thought of a child who is desperately hoping for a friend, a mentor, a big brother or big sister, please step up and pick up the phone or go to the website. Be the one. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY 88.1 FM, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Pamela Varconi. Good night.